Yeah. So hi everybody, welcome all for Tuesday morning, and welcome to, if Esther is online,
Yes.
welcome Esther. So we've come to the end of this module called All About Karma. So today we'll just be doing a review. There were like sort of 17 questions in this review. We'll just go through the whole lot, and most of it I'm sure you'll, a lot of it you will recollect, I'm sure. So let's begin as we normally do by setting our motivation, taking refuge together and offering some prayers, then the actual class will begin. As you know, during the class, we've got moments where we can actually pause, ask questions about the material, and then also do a meditation on it. Okay, so please just get comfortable in your seats, move out, adjust yourself. Ideally, your back will be straight, your shoulders relaxed, your hands and feet will be comfortable. And you can have your eyes open or closed, whatever suits you. Once you are comfortable, relax and let the body breathe itself. And feeling the body breathe itself. Just relax into that awareness. And imagine that the ground beneath your feet is made of starry sapphire light, and it's soft, and it's light, and it's smooth as the palm of a baby's hand. And the space above you is filled with rainbows and offerings. In the space in front of you, on a throne, there are cushions of lotus, sun, and moon. And sitting on the moon seat is Buddha Shakyamuni. He's golden in color. He's wearing the three robes of a monk. His left hand is holding the begging bowl, and his right hand is touching the earth. He's surrounded by an assembly of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, deities, and other enlightened beings. And you are surrounded by all sentient beings. I think that your mother is beside you on the left, the father is beside you on your right, friends and family are behind you, difficult people are in front of you, and strangers surround these four groups of people. To think that you are about to lead all these sentient beings in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Then recollect how fortunate you are to still be alive and have the wish to do that. Have the leisure and opportunity to attain this spiritual goal. But you need to act quickly because things are not quite right. Meaning this world does not exist as it seems to. It seems to be permanent and stable, but it's actually impermanent and in a state of flux. Our world seems to exist objectively when it has no objective existence. All beings mistake the suffering of change for happiness. So although the world does not exist exactly as it seems to, nevertheless, we have met a spiritual friend. And this person is leading us in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. But to make our practice, this offering of practice, as purely as possible, I want you to imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity. And you're holding a vajra in the right hand, a bell in your left hand. You're crossed over your chest, and you're sitting within a sphere of great bliss. From within the sphere of great bliss, you say, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. In response to this wish of ours, see that from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectars are streaming down, and these are dissolving into yourself and all living beings who surround you. And negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan are increased, along with your virtues and realizations. So, cleansed by wisdom and fortified by compassionate love, recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. And decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings into those four states. To affirm this, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So from the heart of each enlightened being above you, lights and nectar stream down, and these dissolve into yourself and all living beings. Negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan are increased, along with your virtues and realizations of Dharma. So when you next exhale, just relax. And from that relaxed state of awareness, invite the field for a key of merit, which appear. And you say before them, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of psychic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So I've engaged in some purification practice and the accumulation of merit. We do not wish to grasp to these practices as if they had any intrinsic existence. So to prevent that, we imagine that ourselves are the practices we've done. Are all utterly transformed and reappear as a pure land of a Buddha. And we're going to offer this to the Lama and the spiritual entourage. And so we say, this ground, anointed with perfumes, strewn with flowers, adorned with mountain air and four continents, sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field in offering. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam guru ratna mandala kamaratalami. So the Buddha accepts this offering and he smiles at us with delight, and we meet his gaze. And under the gaze of the Buddha, we recollect renunciation, bodhicitta, and the correct view. And aspire to be a Buddha ourselves. So, induced by our wishes and prayers, there emerges from the Buddha a second figure who absorbs into us, whereby our form clearly becomes that of a Guru Buddha. They're radiating from the home of your heart, light rays strike all sentient beings surrounding you and place them in the state of Guru Buddha. So you and all sentient beings are each visualized as the Buddha. And at your heart, you have the mantra of Shakyamuni Buddha. So as the mantra reverberates, join in saying, Tayata Muni Muni Mahavanaya. I think the two purposes have been achieved. By this virtue, may each of us quickly achieve the state of a Guru Buddha and place all sentient beings without exception in that very same state. And then breathing in through your nostrils, exhale, and reach your heart spot open. Okay, so we're doing this review. There's basically 17 questions here. We're having a look at the general characteristics of karma, the 10 karmic paths, distinguishing karma that's heavy and light, and the practice of purification, and how to cultivate our ethical behavior. Are the books that I've been relying upon basically for the whole course. I've got this last one, the End Steps on the Path to Enlightenment, has got a really comprehensive coverage of this topic, karma. So let's begin with me asking about what is karma? And as you probably all know, it's really intention. So karma is an intentional action which creates some future effect. Can anybody remember what one of the future effects that karma might create? Rebirth. Yep.
Certainty.
Oh, yeah, karma is certain, and that it will produce an effect of similar type nature. Yeah, so create a rebirth, what they call a fruitional result. Also creates other results like experiential result or behavioral result. An environmental result. So different types of result, different types of future effect. Now, if we don't believe in karma, do the effects of karma still play out in our lives? And the answer is yes. Yes, it does. It's very much like gravity, whether you believe it or not. When you fall over, you head on the ground. And these four general principles of karma, what's the first one? I think you just said that. You said it was definite or certain, wasn't it? The second was that karma increases or magnifies. Third is that you will not experience the effect of an action you did not do. And lastly, the actions you've done do not just naturally perish or have no effect whatsoever. Yes, Angela.
Only completed karma be purified?
No.
Purified
Incomplete. Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, all stages of it can be purified.
okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So let me use this. There's a sort of an analogy they use. It's called the medicinal tree analogy. And this is how it goes. It goes, like karma is definite. So, in other words, if you plant cherry seeds, you only get a cherry tree. This is what's definite about karma. This is what's certain. In other words, you never plant cherry seeds that end up with a pepper plant or an oak tree or something like that, right? It's you only get the cherries. So this is sort of saying to you, look, if you do a good deed, you will only get a good effect. You will not get a bad effect from doing a good deed. And if you do bad deeds, you don't get good effects. This is what I was trying to show you. The second one is that it magnifies, isn't it, or increases. Karma is expandable. And you know that when you put one little seed in the ground, doesn't it? It can produce a big result. I could get the tree, you get the fruit, you get the shade, you get birds in the trees, you get timber off the trees. It's just massive, big, big thing for one little thing. It's the same idea. So I could do one little thing, the results could be hugely good. Do one bad little thing, the results could be terribly bad. It just has this expandable effect. If you want cherries, you need to actually plant a cherry seed. Just wishing for cherries when you don't have seeds, you won't get cherries. It has to be more than just hoping. An intended action has to be carried out. And lastly, this says the karmic results are inevitable if nothing is done. If something is done, then the karmic result is not inevitable. But what it's sort of saying here, that if you have that seed, like if you imagine you've got a cherry seed, you've got a packet of cherry seeds. They're not going to produce cherry trees unless you put them in the ground, but they have the potential to. And while they're in that packet, in the cupboard, they have the potential is dormant. If it does not meet up to the conditions, or if you crush those seeds, you are not going to get cherry plant. This is So when we hear this, the results of karma are inevitable, always remember, only if you do nothing about it. Otherwise, I mean, what would be the point of learning about this? It'd just be pointless, wouldn't it? Yes, didn't it?
Esther has a question.
Yes.
She asks, how about when someone has good deeds, but because of ignorance or not enough knowledge, causes harm to someone else? Like, because she's afraid, like, for example, if you're afraid to cause harm, then you don't end up doing any actions at all, because you don't, kind of like, you intend to do something well, but then the outcome was harmful.
So Esther, for this, I'll take this. One of the questions that's asked in the text is like, what is the function of the human being? Well, that's a great question. The answer is to act. So humans like act. Now, as you're saying, so we don't have a clear understanding of cause and effect. So we're always under the power of ignorance. Nevertheless, through our ignorance, we still create good actions and we create bad actions. But both of them are infused with this ignorance. What are we ignorant of? The future effects. We don't really know what our actions are going to bring about. So this is why the most important thing of any action is the intention. So see, this is the seed, right? A good seed produces the good effect. That's what you can be sure of, Esther. The bad actions will produce bad effects. So always know that. So we're talking about you yourself as the actor. We can have a good intentions to help people, and yet those people still get hurt. But if you ask yourself, did you intend to hurt that person? And your answer is no. In fact, I actually tried to help them. That's the outcome for them, which is what's a negative. This does not come on you. Yes. Both guys are unskillful, aren't they? But like I'm saying, if you look at the stories of the Buddha, right? So the Buddha was an enlightened being, and he was enlightened as a human. So while he was alive as a human being, he was enlightened. And his job, of course, is to help others abandon suffering and its causes. So he's doing everything to help people do that. So you think of this. So the Buddha extends his love and care, compassion, and skill towards his nephew. He's helping him. What does the nephew do? Decides he's a fraud and he should be hanged. So this is not, just because you have the good intentions doesn't mean to say that you're going to get the outcomes you're seeking. The outcomes are primarily your own. That's what the karma is about. It's about you. So the Buddha's got no bad karma. He's completely clear. He wants to help. The other person wants to harm him. All he's doing is helping. So you look at our and go, okay, we're trying to help too, aren't we? But then the people that we try to help don't respond to our help as we would like. And so they do unskillful things. That's on them. However, Andrew, like if you know, oh, I want to, here's this person asking me for some money, I look really poor and disheveled and so forth. But I know they're an alcoholic.
He's
You
young.
can't see them, you don't know all that, the background. This is not their behavior doesn't come back on you as your karma. Their behavior, that's their karma. Our behavior, that's our karma. So remember, as I said before, the difficult thing for Westerners, they're always looking at the effect. They think that's the karma. It's not. It's the cause. Karma is causal, primarily causal, motivation. But so try to, and don't do yourself any harm by thinking when you do good things and then somebody responds badly to it, that's on you. If you know they're going to do something unskillful and you go ahead and give it, well then, that's where you've got to go, okay, no, perhaps I can buy you lunch instead. Are you hungry? What do you need the money for? You've got all sorts of questions, but of course, people don't always tell you the truth. So they may lie to you, and you go, well, that's all I've got to go on. We're not omniscient. We're not Buddhists. We're just doing the best we can. But these principles of karma are always there. Otherwise, the first certainty of karma is out the window, isn't it? Oh, I do a good thing, then a bad thing follows. So now karma is not certain at all. There's no definiteness about karma. So that's. Yeah, don't add up. Well, you've got to remember that samsara is not like samsara is not out there, right? Samsara is created by our mind. That's like wherever the samsaric existence. And within that existence, and so that's our samsara. So what we call like the world comes under the first noble truth that there is suffering. And so there's no avoidance of it while we are in samsara. We can't avoid these things, Andrew. Right? So this is why you get all these solutions, right? Like the purification practice, like purification practice. We know we're going to kill lots of different animals, and so we should know this, right? And sometimes you will like have to think, I have to, and then if you do, then okay, so you have to. You know that the action is made up of four different parts. You need to make some of those parts really weak. Like that you have to means you don't bring any enjoyment to it. You have immense regret while you're doing it. So,
That's helpful to think about it like that, right?
yes, because you don't enjoy it, do you? I mean, you hear me talking about it again. No, I hate this thing
I
doing
know.
this. And yet they said these activities, we engage in them. So we've got to, like I said, this is the beauty of working, how when we look at actions, everything's made up of parts.
I just listened to it.
Okay. Yeah, so with this, we need to, in terms of good karma, we need to strengthen all the parts as much as we can to get the best possible result. In terms of negative karmas, we need to weaken it as much as we possibly can so we get this least effect. And then it becomes easier to purify as well. And so we have this quote, you know, as in planting, happiness and misery are effects from the deeds performed. So how can a bitter seed yield you a sweet fruit? Or like you're saying, how can a sweet seed yield you a bitter fruit? It doesn't. This is what it's sort of getting. This is what we're saying, like Carmen said, sweet to sweet, bitter to bitter. Yeah, remember always, karma's basically like causal. I mean, it's very easy to look at the effect and go, oh, that's the karma, and I've got something to do with it. You know, what did I do? Because seeing this universal truth, the wise should think. Evil doing brings painful effects, while good deeds always lead to peace and happiness. So the top part's sort of looking at the cause, and the bottom part's looking more at the effect. Yeah, so there's a couple of things going on here. One is like, we've got karma, cause, and effect. Now, the causes always bring these certain effects. That's for certain. Negative to negative, positive to positive, sweet to sweet, bitter to bitter. Now, once the effect takes place, you have freedom, or as much as you can bring to it, to choose how you wish to respond to the effect. The effect is still negative, but what's your response to it? That's where we have the freedom here. And what you want to bring to it is a really positive reaction to it. Right? You know, like, so we often say, when we often experience suffering, most just go, oh, that is not pleasant. And actually, we don't like that we got it. But if you understand this, it's just an effect that came from its cause. It couldn't be otherwise. Then most of what Dharma people say is, oh, good, thank goodness, because now I can deal with it. Especially as a human being, that's the great beauty of being a human being. You get choice. You have choice here. So it's not like, you know, if it were inherently bad, well, it would have to be bad all the way, would you? We couldn't think of it any other way, but it's a terrible thing. But it's not. So what the most people often do is go, oh, thank goodness that this karma has now ripened while I'm a human being, because I can deal with it. Imagine if it happened while I was in the Bardo or as an animal or something. I have no idea. It would just be bad for me. But here, instead of like being depressed about it, you could actually bring a state of joy to it. You just go, oh, thank goodness that one's ripened. That's finished. That's great. Or you can bring compassion to it. There's so many different things you can do, depending upon your skill set and what you know about Dharma. Okay.
And I guess by training ourselves to change how we respond to the situation, we can protect ourselves in a way from creating more negative karma.
Yeah, this is what we, you know, mean by refuge. So, you know, it's like, you know, the rain falls. That's what happens. The rain falls. Now, what's your response? You're going to get cranky because you got wet, or you're going to laugh because it's, man, it's so good to have rain again. It's up to you. But whatever that thing is, that's a new cause now. It's like, you know, effects and causes, like I said before, they're not. So, in a continuum of cause and effect, the cause always comes before the effect. So, effects in that way are not the causes. But once the effect has come to fruition, and now we respond, now there's our karma right there. How we respond, we create new karma right there. In other words, like the effect of a past karma, it's finished. Now what? We're going to kick off something good or something negative, something that's going to be more hurtful or something that's good. What will
It's like everything that happens can be a step upwards or a step
Yes,
down, but
yeah, that's exactly right.
it's
Yes,
coming
that's right.
together.
That's a good way of putting it. Okay, let's do our first meditation. Let your body become still and let your breath flow naturally. We're going to explore karma to understand how our actions shape our experiences. I want you just to imagine that your consciousness is a garden. And in this garden, intentions become seeds. And these seeds sort of wait to grow to the fruits of the future. So the Buddha taught that all experiences arise from causes we ourselves have planted, we ourselves have created. So when we understand karma, we gain the power to create happiness and to eliminate suffering. So recollect the four principles of karma are like this medicinal tree. Its seed always produces healing, never poison. Its growth multiplies from tiny seed to vast canopy. It only yields medicine when planted. And its potential to yield medicine remains until conditions allow it to flourish. So how might you apply the certainty of karma in your daily choices? Well, I think we need to consider which intentions we're putting out into the world, which seeds are we planting, moment to moment. In other words, why are we doing what we're doing? Just think about that. Then try to think about what small positive action could you magnify through repeated practice? What small positive action could you magnify through repeated practice? So, kind words, smiles, offerings of cups of tea, saying hello. Any of these simple activities could grow into a profound connection. And I wonder if you've ever witnessed the dormant seeds of past actions suddenly bearing fruit in your own life. This would remind you that no action's potential ever disappears. So resolve to plant intentional seeds of compassion, wisdom, and virtue today. And through your understanding of karma, through this module, may this guide you towards awakening for the benefit of all beings. And then breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth. I was just thinking, what small positive action could you magnify through repeated practice? So the simplest one is rejoicing. I know we don't do it often. This is just simply looking out for any good that you could recognize anywhere and just rejoicing in it. Okay, so now we come to the non-virtuous actions of body, speech, and mind. So there are three non-virtuous bodily actions. Can anybody recollect what they are?
Killing.
Killing is the biggest and the worst, the heaviest. Yeah.
Stealing.
There's stealing.
Sexual misconduct.
Sexual misconduct, that's right. Significance comment. Sometimes readable took the term called unwise and unskillful.
Constructive and destructive actions.
Oh, yes, and actions, yeah, but in terms of sexual misconduct, it's obviously unwise or unskillful sexual behavior. So I quite like that, unwise, unskillful. Then there are non-virtuous verbal actions. Can anybody remember what they are?
Lying.
Lying is one, yep.
Devices.
Divisive speech.
That's it.
Gossip.
Harsh speech.
Harsh speech. Thank you, Cal. That's right. You've got lying, that's the heaviest one. Then there's divisive speech, hurtful speech, and idle chatter or gossip. So I've marked, I made different colour there for the top one, just to say that within this branch, the heaviest is lying. The physical, the heaviest is the killing. In terms of non-virtuous mental actions, what are they? Does anyone remember?
Covetousness.
Covetousness, that's right.
Incorrect view.
Yes, incorrect view. That's another one, Angela, that's right.
Malice.
Malice is the other, isn't it? Covetousness, malice, and these wrong views. And here you can see it's the last one that's the heaviest, the wrong views. What they wanted, what the question was, name one of the 10 non-virtuous actions and describe some of the results one might experience as a result of having engaged in that non-virtuous action. So in other words, you take killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, harsh, or any one of them and go, okay, what type of effects might I experience by having engaged in that? So when you look at them, basically there are three or four, you can say. Susie, what was one of them?
Just expand on wrong views.
I was going to say, not right now, because there are five wrong views altogether, and so that way you have, you have five wrong views, and basically it'll have to do with the way you look at yourself, the way you apprehend yourself or other phenomena, especially karmic cause and effect too. So we have wrong views about them, basically, and it's all about that, Susan. So here, like I said, so can anybody remember what some of the effects are of a fully complete verbal non-virtue, for instance, or physical non-virtue, verbal non-virtue? Yeah, this is a, and that would be like a maybe a experiential effect. I'll just put them up like this, and you can take any one of them, right? So if the action is complete, then the fruitional result is always the lower realms. If it's negative in terms of the fruitional result, it's always negative. Remember, negative produces negative, positive to positive. So the ripening result or fruitional result is always a lower realm rebirth. Now, suppose you miss that, but you end up as a human being like us, then there are other types of effect. Now we get behavioral result, experiential result, and environmental result. And this way of looking at things is always, you could go across every one of these negative behaviors, physical, mental, or verbal, and plot it out and go, okay. Yeah, so what you was just saying about gossiping. So the behavioral result is we continue to gossip. But there's an experiential result, which is, like you say, oh gosh, gossip, idle talk. People don't listen to our words or value what we say.
Yeah,
Others just
that
laugh at
happens
us.
to me. I must be the worst gossip.
Yeah, there
What's
you
the
go.
worst thing that's gossip?
Yeah, see, it's nice like that when you get that. You go, oh my gosh, this is why. Okay. I'm not going to gossip. When I do speak, I'll speak of meaningful things. Right? So we work against that, so it doesn't happen again. That's really the only purpose of knowing the intricacies of all this material, We work out what hurts us, we know it's made up of parts. Okay, I need to weaken that. I don't want to be hurt. I don't want to be disrespected in this life. Nobody listened to me laughing at me. Well, it's past causes. Perhaps I can stop that by speaking more meaningfully right now. So we stop gossiping and then we put it in place its antidote, its opposite. Now, it's a similar thing with virtuous speech, but the results are different, right? This time, the righteous result is always higher realm rebirth, human and above. The behavior is always the same, similar type thing. And the differences are, of course, is the experiential result and the environmental result. We need to sort of stop something, or they call it abandoning, or ceasing the bad behavior, and then adopting its opposite. So when we, you know, when it comes to lying, we actually what? Abandon or stop lying, isn't it? That's the first thing. The next thing is to speak truthfully. Yeah, so we find this, we find that we're actually, I've met people like this who sort of love conflict and stirring it up. In fact, this bloke I met once, he was saying he loved doing this more. He says, I know people love to play chess. He says, I like to play people. And he'd do these things, you know, and we'd sit back and watch. What the thing that was like this. So to do that, you've got to sort of like stop. And what's its opposite? Well, you never sort of think of that's just promoting harmony amongst people rather than divisiveness. Yeah, it's quite useful, isn't it? When you look at this, you know, you can ask the question, why is this happening to me? You go, well, it's karma. That's the one thing we do know. But what's the effect you're experiencing after this? Okay, the cause has got to be somewhere. If you're experiencing something negative, the cause is something negative. You go back. What is it? Could it be in here? Okay. Now I don't want that to take place. I want to change it. You go, okay, don't do it anymore. You did it in the past, you got the effect. Don't continue to do it. Stop, do its opposite. So that way it's quite sort of simple, at least for the understanding. The doing, not so simple, not easy. So the results of karma are always like this, these fruitional results. Kind of life form you take. Good, higher rebirth. Bad, lower rebirth. Then if you found that you're born as a human, then you have results corresponding to the cause and experiences similar to the cause. And then there are the environmental results. The fruitional results, it's quite straightforward, it's the rebirth. You can look around, you see a cat, you know, like a lower animal, lower rebirth. Substantial cause for that, the cause for that fruition has to be negative. How's it living? Is it out on the street or is it with some people looking after it really kindly? So we've got this, and this is another type of cause and effect. If we're humans, of course, we can use something like this. Now, again, the most important factor in terms of the weight and the effects and all anything to do with karma is intention, because karma is intention. It's the most important thing. So it's not such a bad idea to ask yourself, why am I doing this occasionally? You're about to do something. Yeah, there's a lot of bad, terrible things are happening in the world. We don't want those things to keep happening. We want to try and stop them, put an end to them. Okay, that's good. So what's driving you to do that? You know, you might say, well, it's compassion, of course. Compassion is driving me to make these decisions. So it's a good thing to set that motivation nice and clear. Because a little bit later, as the action has commenced, it can change. But the major thing, you've already set it in place, right? Yeah, so intention's a big one, the biggest. Now, in terms of heavy karma, again, it's intention that comes up. Then the method that you use. So, of course, heavy could be like heavy bad or heavy good. You actually want to have more heavy good than heavy bad. So again, my views plays a major part here. And there's a quote, you know, it says, a heavy action committed by a wise person becomes light. See, like this should help us look back over our lives and say, what is it that I've, what do I regret? What have I done in my life that I regret? And see, so that's sort of like heavy. But it's negative, right? But because you know how karma exists and how you know that things are changeable and you can change them, then you change. You go, okay, now I need to do something about that. Because even now I still regret it. So like I don't want this thing to come up and bite me. And regret's one of the ways of like stopping it doing that. Because along with that regret, hopefully will be this idea, I won't do that again. But that's the whole point of regretting things, isn't it? You go, damn, that hurt. I'm not doing it again. Those two come together, that's terrific. But to have regret with guilt, there's no room for this in this. Right? We're regretting the actions. We're not coming at ourselves for being unskillful. And of course, always do the actions directed towards. So, you know, when you do these sort of things, it's not such a bad idea to get a list like that and then look at it from the negative side and the positive side. So, if you look at these factors that you term are heavy, you might go negative karma. So what would be the intention here? What would be the heaviest intention to create a heavy negative karma?
To kill someone.
To kill somebody, usually, isn't it? That's real heavy action. Right? So,
And enjoy it.
well, we'll come down to that. That's where the lack of the remedy is, right? Now, you want to make it really heavy, so you're going to kill somebody. What's the method you're going to use?
Make painful torture.
Yeah, make it terrible. What terrible, torturous thing. A lack of a remedy. Yeah, I have no regret. Have no regret about it at all. Yeah. The views, going to be wrong views here, right? And then the recipient, who'd be the worst sort of recipient you could do that to? Yeah, you'd go to a Buddha or your teacher, and then your parents. There's a sort of a scale here. The major reasons for the teachers is because they're trying to help you stop suffering. You know, in fact, when I say to you, what do you have? Why do you have any respect for your teacher? The answer is because they're kind, because of their kindness towards me. So here's somebody who's only acted towards you kindly. Yeah, that's the person I need to hurt. And so forth. So that's on the negative side. But then again, if you switch it across the positive side, what would be the best intention you could put forward to make it a really heavy karma? To become enlightened, no, that's the best. Bodhicitta is the best intention you could have. So, right, I'm going on this march to actualize Buddhahood for all beings. Now, what's the method? Marching. Lack of a remedy? No, I've just got joy. What's the view? Now, there you can go, we're all empty and dependent arising. We exist in mere name. The recipient, so who's it directed towards? Not so well to do this for my teacher, or all sorts of things. But either way, you want to play around with this. Oh, see, just this one here. So there are a number of different really heavy things you can do. So again, you could take this and just go back to the negative ones and go, well, I can hear the heaviest negative karmas. Like you said, so I want to murder an enlightened being. You might say that. Yeah, that would be, wow, this is my intention. Take the life of an enlightened being. And you can imagine the worst way. Or you could, again, so just play around. What's the heaviest side? What's the positive side? You just get used to it. So, okay, these actions are made up of parts. I need to strengthen the good parts, weaken and this bad action, weaken the other parts. You'll see this is very much like If you think about it, yeah, that show I think was used to be called This Is Your Life. And they used to invite people up on stage, and then they bring all these people out, and they tell you about the person's life, right? And oftentimes this was the really good things, of course, for some unfortunate things too. But it's like really sort of building you up, and it's like, wow, look what this person has done. You can turn around and go, what about a court case? You know, if you put somebody up in the box and they've actually done something negative, it's like, you know, they come at you like that, isn't it? This is all the bad things they have done. And you want your lawyer to get up and try and explain that, you know, like why and how you've actually changed. This is a similar type process as karma. I think these are the major three. There might be another one. Three, four. Who else is there? Yeah, so when we create good, positive activities, so the way the heaviest ones, of course, are directed towards the three jewels. Then teachers, parents, and then those who are suffering.
I remember I had an interview with Geshe Janmyang, and he found out I worked in a hospital, and he said, "Oh, be very, very careful, because those the pa sick patients are such important recipients. So how you go to work is really important." And that stuck with me ever since. So I'm really careful when I'm at work how I treat my patients, because the karma is very heavy with those patients, and to make sure I take good care of them.
Debbie, thank you for adding that. Now, can karma be purified? You should all say yes. Otherwise, what's the point of all this talk about it? Of course, it can be purified. Again, it's like I said, it's a produced phenomena. It does anything produced can be broken down, brought to an end. The choices we make have the power to reshape the consequences of our past. This again, these are sort of things you need to sort of like think about. Like, you know, like there are, if I look back at my, I say a simple thing. So at one time, I had a very negative view of the parenting skills of my parents. And I held that view for quite a long time. And then one day I had a big think about it and then changed my ideas. And I no longer have that old idea about my parents' parenting skills. So just, you know, like I say, you just reshape. You get more information, you have a different way of thinking about the past. So in the present, you make the change and then it affects your past. But you can't look back at your parents in the same way as you did before. Now you can just look and say, oh man, they had no idea. They were just trying to do the best they could. But they didn't have, you know, like the way I thought was like an intention of malice behind what they were doing, right? These people were out to get me. If you still think that way, you draw one set of conclusions. It's not a good one. You think of another way, just stop it all. So it's the same with all of us, I'm sure. The stuff we look back at our past, those actions were done, but how we think about them now, that can change. So yes, our karma can be purified. And what we mainly do is, obviously, these four opposing powers that we introduced a little while ago. Of all of them, the most important, as you know, is the first one, remorse. Everything works after that. If you look at just two of them, it'd be remorse and resolve. Meaning you looked at this activity you've done, you have remorse towards the action or the regret towards it, and then you go, that is going to cause me a lot of problems. I'm not doing it again. And, you know, in fact, I'm not going to do it. In fact, I don't want to have all those problems as well. Is there anything else I can do? Then you can come and go, yeah, there's these remedies. There's these other things you can do. Of course, you can. It's like often they give the analogy of the way to think of this is that you've just taken poison. And of course, you have this, you know, it's not guilt or blame that you've taken poison. It's just like, ah, I don't, what? I'm so sorry, I took the poison. And you immediately, what could I do? What could I do? Drinking milk, is it drinking more water? What do I have to do here to stop the effect? So we've got to have this remedy. And then, of course, we've got to rely upon it. So we use it. And then we resolve, like, geez, I'm not doing that again. I'm not eating that food. I'm not eating that poison again. I'm not. But so that's sort of, how we sort of work. So this quote says, this is the Buddha talking to Maitreya. Maitreya, when a bodhisattva, a great being, possesses these four teachings, non-virtuous actions that are performed and accumulated will be overcome. So what are these four? They are the power of remorse, the power of the antidote, the power of turning away from faults, and the power of the basis. But again, you have different terms for these four R's. Again, this is not unusual. You'll see different teachers using these different terms. Remorse is the same. Antidote is for remedy. The power of turning away. This is the power of resolve. Resolve to turn away from the behavior. And the basis is the power of reliance. So again, these questions are all around this idea of can karma be purified? You say, yes, it can. We use those four opponent powers. And another thing you can do, of course, is use those six methods of purification. I think we talked about this last week. So there's the reliance upon the profound sutras, which means reading, hearing, or contemplating them. And then, of course, all the time, this is the big one. It always comes to this, if anything arises dependent, is empty of any intrinsic nature. They're all changeable. There's nothing set in stone here. It's not permanent. If I do something, I can change it. There's different types of recitation, like the mantras and so forth. Relying upon images. Worshipping, and then of course the names. So sometimes you have the names of Tara, sometimes it's Medicine Buddha, sometimes it's 35 Buddhas, sometimes it's Vajrasattva. Images, you can use the image of like Vajrasattva and the light coming down and purifying. And so I mentioned, so these are all, like I said, they look at it as like a different medicine. So it seems that when we come to the Gompa, when we come to the center, there's this way of looking at ourselves as we come in. Does anybody remember what that is? How are we to think of ourselves as we come into the Gompa? Or we come to the center? Or we come in here even? I am sick. I'm unwell. I've come to get the medicine. From the Dharma, from my doctor, which is the Buddha, or me representing that doctor, and I have a prescription for you, the medicine, the Dharma. You have to take it. If you want to get well, you need to take the Dharma medicine. This is really easy to forget. Right at the very beginning, this is the lame room, how the students should behave before you even go. You go, well, I'm sick. And Aurobindo used to say, we're all addicts. That's right. And we're sick. And we want to do something about it. So we come along to the hospital to find out what I can do. And then you hear about the medicine and you go, okay, it makes sense to me. This should cure my sickness. Now, one of the doctors you can rely upon, of course, is Vajrasattva. Vajrasattva. And the way Vajrasattva primarily purifies is using the idea of light and the power of resolve. You've got the four powers. The major one is you just resolve not to do these unskillful things again. You understand how you're being poisoned every time you do it. That'll pretty help you. The purification is not about erasing the past, but about actively healing its effects within you right now. Which just makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, that's what happens, right? Like, if we're sick right now, well, we know that's an effect. It must have had causes. I need to actually heal the effect, like right now. I mean, if this was happening for us physically, we'd go off to the doctor, wouldn't we? That's what we do, right? We go off to the doctor, we go and tell them, this is what's happening to me. What can you do? He'll listen to us, do his diagnosis, and he'll write a script. And our job is to go and get that script cashed in and start taking the medicine. It's the same here. We just go, I've got, you know, mental stuff going on, things I think about. It's disturbing. I need help, you know. Oh, I'll go along to the center and have a listen, see if I can use something. So Rajasattva practice, I found it really great for when you have a shower. So most of us have showers in the morning or at night, right? You just feel that water come on back of your head and on the top of your skull. It feels great. I mean, I love it. I love that feeling of the water coming down, right? I mean, you're in there to wash your body, aren't you? But I think it's like the light now washing my mind. So you just have it, you know, and just sort of like, oh, so nice. And okay, then just have it all go white, right? Get rid of it all, I'm purified. Say this mantra, I'm not a sinner.
Yeah, I mentioned that too. And she said, oh, no, I don't think I could do that, mate.
Oh.
She was really self-conscious about Badrasattva being there when she's naked in the shower.
Yeah, so, you know,
you were born naked.
Where are you? But yeah, the white colour of Badrasattva shows the nakedness. Completely clean. Yeah, now we've got funny ideas. Another practice we can do, of course, is 35 Buddha practice. Basically, you're doing a lot of prostrations. You're bowing down, full length prostrations most times, and you're reciting the name. And there's a lovely prayer that goes with this, a bodhisattva, confession of bodhisattva downfalls. And if you read that, you go, hey, I'm saying this because this deals with everything. And Lama Tsongkhapa did a million prostrations to each one of these Buddhas. It's like 25 million prostrations. In fact, they still see the indents in the stone where the knees went down, pushed on it. Yeah, that's a lot of it. Yeah. Okay, well, let's do the next meditation. Just feel the support beneath you and let your body breathe itself. We're trying to cultivate a clear mind here. It was not to judge the past, but to skillfully build a more wholesome future for ourselves. So try to recollect a challenge or a past action you wish you'd handled differently. So this action will create four kinds of results. We'll try to think of these, what the results would be in relation to that action. Now, first there is the fruition result. Then the behavior result. The experiential result. The environmental result. Okay, so now recollect that we have four apparent paths. And these are precise tools which can purify past causes and their effects. So when we created this past action that we wish we'd handled differently, an action we have some regret about, it will produce four results. They will be the illness. But the four powers are the medicine. So remember those four powers are, there's regret is the first, and you think of the other three. So just suppose you have a habit of impatience, or you have been impatient in the past. Just think of how you could apply the four opponent powers to impatience. The first is the simplest one, the applying regret or remorse for being impatient. We have to try to repair any harm caused by our impatience. We need to promise to ourselves to be more patient in the future. We can practice love and kindness as the antidote or patience itself. So why do you think that sincere regret or sincere remorse is considered to be the first and most vital step in the healing process? But because the four powers are the medicine for our illness, regret is the essential diagnosis. Without acknowledging the illness, we would never seek the medicine to begin with. So does this change your view of personal responsibility? So through knowing of these four powers and knowing that they are the medicine for the illness, responsibility is transformed from a heavy burden of blame and guilt into an empowering ability to administer your own healing. We can become and need to become wise physicians of the mind. So if a negative habit arises, if a negative response arises, just gently apply the first power, a sincere and a kind-hearted regret. And then breathing in through your nostrils, exhale. There's a beer bottle. There's a ton of beer sold here. Is it 4X? Is it? Is that 3x, 4x?
4x.
4x, yeah. So I remember thinking of that, you know, thinking, you know, what would be great is 4x. I just look, it's like, I think like x is like a no, you know, it's like four no's. I think I was like, man, it's a great bottle. I should put like poisonous head on it and just call it 4x. Because alcohol is quite poisonous, isn't it? And yet, you know, I was like, that's how we also look at these, you know, our ideas and go, yeah, we're just poisoning ourselves. Whenever you have any negative stuff, go, yeah, I poisoned myself. Oh, God. Sincere regret. I thought, you know, the idea of in the fridge would be great, because I just look at that and go, yeah, no. Okay, so we've done a lot of stuff on negative karma, how to purify it, which is also positive karmas, and these two can be destroyed, and the biggest destroyer of them all is anger. You look back at your own life, this is very, you'll see this is the case. And you know, I've given the example of my own life with my parents, my anger towards my parents. I could not see any good that they'd done to me, and this was completely mistaken. Yeah, so anger, and then of course the wrong views, wrong ideas about these objects. Now, so that's how we can destroy positive karma. Of course, we've also got to create positive karma. And there are ways of doing it that are sort of easier than other ways. So the easiest way of all is through rejoicing. The good has already been done. All you have to do is notice it and appreciate it and go, thank you. Oh, how wonderful. Yeah. So one of the simplest things I find very joyful is that the fact that, you know, this Tibetan culture, and we've come into contact with it. So we've got all these lovely teachers out here actually talking to us, showing us what causes suffering and how you can stop it. I mean, gosh. And here in Brisbane. I remember this one time thinking, you know, I wanted to go to India, and I was thinking, hang on a minute, Pinsir Rinpoche just lives up the road, like an hour away. Now he's actually living in Brisbane. There's actually these amazing teachers, like, right here. And then, you know, the most common thing I rejoice in is just the fact that I'm still alive. Now, this is something, like I said, you ever think about it. Just to still be alive there, it's like a miracle, it really is. Because of how many forces are actually working against us. In the end, they're going to win, aren't they? In the end, we're going to die. But right now, we're still alive. Now, you think about that, and the sky and the space, there's so much to think about and really appreciate and rejoice and lift yourself up. Now, the other thing is that, like we do at the end of this class, and wherever you do anything, just dedicate it towards this goal. Any good you do, even rejoicing, may I become a Buddha. May this act of rejoicing produce the effect of enlightenment where I can actually benefit all beings. Just keep reminding ourselves of this, like, again and again. They often say too that you want to dedicate as quickly as possible after you've done something good, so that between the doing the good, anger doesn't creep in and you get cranky and destroy it. the other thing, like I said, be patient. You know, samsara is described as being, like I say in our introduction, not quite right. Our lives are not quite right. And so it's easy to become impatient with that and think they should be more right than they actually are. This is just the way it is. Be patient. Things will come and go. And lastly, we can recollect what they call the three spheres. The three spheres are basically just that there's us, and we create an action. There's the act, there's the person, the action, and the action finishes. There's some sort of outcome from that action, in other words. So often I notice the beginning, middle, and end. But every action's got parts, three parts, beginning, middle, and end. Because these parts depend upon one another and language and conception, They're empty of any intrinsic nature. It's independent. So the thing is, this is getting together. It's like, look, whatever we're considering, whatever exists, it's empty and dependent. I, who am acting, am empty and dependent. Action is dependent. The goal that I seek is dependent. This is what we mean by the three spheres. The actor, the action, and the consequence. These are three spheres. Remember, they have no intrinsic nature. They're not permanent. They arise. So they said, you know, the dedication is like depositing your paycheck. So we've been working here, we've got a paycheck coming. We've been working hard. At the end of this, you'll have accumulated some merit. Here's your pay. Now, what are you going to do with it? Oh, I'm going to stick a stone in my body to the bank. I'll put it right there. I want the best outcome for my, I want the best return for my efforts. And that's Buddhahood. So we do that. The practical, so anything, after any kind act you do, you could just, it may bring benefit to them. Now, of course, you want to try to think the benefit you want to give them. It's like, no, bring them to enlightenment. This is probably the simplest one. Like I said, the simplest one is rejoicing. Just lift your heart up, be happy. And now, so, you know, when we engage in the spiritual path, we want to not just know about the path, but to realize the effects of that path. We want to bring about an actual transformation. Now, there's only really, I'm going to mention the major two ways here, but there's actually three. And the simplest way for us is, like they say, purify karma. It's just like wash your dishes, wash the plate, get yourself cleaned up. Clean yourself up and then get ready to do good, and then do good. So it's just called accumulate the merit. It's sort of like the movies, isn't it? When you see the people go into the clinics and you got to clean your act up, mate. You got to clean yourself up. And go, that's right, because once I am, then I'm ready again. I'll be okay. And so that's what we need to do. Get rid of what hinders us and then do some good. There's another part. So this advice came from a mentor himself, Lama Tsongkhapa. He was having quite difficulty understanding the emptiness. And although he was looking at all the different scholars' approaches and reading many texts, he realized he still didn't know. He had a shepherd with him, Lama Umapa, who could directly get in touch with Manjushri, you know. And so Lama Umapa said to Lama Tsongkhapa, you can do this yourself. When Lama Tsongkhapa did it, the Manjushri said, if you want to realize emptiness, you need to do these two things too. Purify your negative karma. That's why he did the 35 million prostrations, the 35 Buddhas. Accumulate the merit. So I don't know how many millions of mandalas he made. Right. I remember reading that the... So they do really simple things. They just have a flat stone and then you rub the stone on it. So it wore away the skin on his forearms. But like I said, that cave, you can still see the indentations of the kneeling. I thought, well, that's right, only 35 million prostrations on a rock should make some little difference. So do these two, but then you said, look, see your teacher as it being indivisible from the deity you're engaged in. So yeah, so now I can say, we start off by trying to say that, so see yourself to be as clear as a deity in your holding of mantra and bell. That's what this is about. It's like, don't identify with your ordinary sense of self. Identify with the Buddha nature that's come to fruition, the divine self, divine identity. It's called divine identity. So instead of sitting there going, I am Mel, and I'm taking refuge, and da da da. You can actually, Mel is a construct, so it's empty. The body of Mel is empty, the mind of Mel is empty, I'm merely called Mel. Okay. So when I do that, I'm that wisdom sees me now as being Manjushri or the deity. I'm just called Manjushri. I have this body of light, looks like this, completely insubstantial, but it is all the wisdom and all the skills of an enlightened being. So we try to imagine ourselves like that. Then we engage in the practice. So when you're introduced to these sort of practices, the instructions from the teachers, you have to try and see the teacher as the Buddha, as an enlightened being. Then what he will do is like send out one of his emanations to go up above the crown of your head. And it'll come down, you bring it down into you, and you go, now I'm an enlightened being. So then we did our meditations, just didn't have all the details. It's like, right, Buddha is sitting out there in front of you. Now an emanation comes up above the head, comes down to you. Now you're enlightened. Now you're engaging the practices of enlightenment. Rays of light go out. You turn every sentient being into an enlightened being. This is what this is getting at. Try and get it away from the ordinary sense of self. This is always grasping at that. That's why. You always grasping at the me that's doing all these practices. Okay, you've got to stop that. Can't get grabbing at yourself as being this ordinary person, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, come at it as if you were enlightened. That's just one of the techniques. Again, the technique has to suit you. So some people, this is too much for them. It's easier for just, oh, I'm thinking Buddha's out there. He does this thing and then I transform. But whatever works for you. Yes, like sort of thinking, what that's called, result. So we've got causal refuge and resultant refuge. So most of our practice is causal, like we're trying to become like a Buddha. We've got the examples of the historical Buddha. We've got examples of Dalai Lama, Lama Zopa, all these other people. That's causal. We depend upon them to bring about the result. We are Buddha. That's the goal, isn't it? We're trying to become a Buddha. Right? When you do this exercise, you're taking the point of view of the result. The result has been accomplished. I have the causes to attain enlightenment. We have Buddha nature, the empty nature of the mind. It's already present. What's also present is just a mistaken idea of who we are and how we exist. So we get rid of the mistake and then come out as the result. I've got rid of the mistakes. Imagine I've got rid of all my mistakes. I've purified. I've accumulated so much merit that I am now a Buddha. What would that look like? But we imagine it, right? And then we take, well, I've imagined myself as a Buddha. This is the resultant effect I have sought. What will I be doing? Well, I'll be helping sentient beings, of course. How will you do that? Well, through teaching. Right, so you see the lights go out as this offering to all sentient beings. It works. It utterly transforms them. So we see this all in our imagination. So we've got like 17 to 19. Here I've got 19. I think I had to, only 17. But there's these public exam questions, so I've taken them all and given you all the answers. Sort of do this with somehow some it might stick. Right? So when you actually come to do it, you go, yeah, I know that one. I know that one. Make it a bit easier for yourself. Don't have to stress so much. So you'll see all these in the public examination up there. You don't have to do these, but if you'd like to, there are a number of different students here that are doing them. So often, so just try and write it out first. Just gives you more time to work it out. Then you can check. And then ask me to offer, just come down and sit with me and just talk to me. So you can use your own words. Right? It's just easier, I think, if you use your own words. You bring your own understanding to it and just say it. Course, it's entirely up to you. We have this game from afflictions to perfections. There's a week off, and then we'll come back and we'll be doing the refuge in the three jewels. So I say here, I remember Geshe-la saying one time, once you've taken refuge, This means the work has now begun. And so we often think of rest as like an ending, so now it's a beginning. But now you're committing yourself to begin this path. And he said, so what's the essence of it all? He said one thing of this thing, he said, follow the teachings of cause and effect. Just explains how things work. That's what we try to do, is it? How does suffering work? How can we stop suffering? How does the goodness arise? Which produce it. That's all it's about. And I always like that saying when you ask, what are the Buddha's teachings about? He says, how to overcome suffering and how to fully flourish. That's it. Okay, so let's dedicate our merits. Please join me in saying, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into their enlightened state. May the Supreme Jewel, Bodhi Chitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. The wish-granting, wish-fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, to the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And lastly, the prayer for Rinpoche, the discovery of Rinpoche's reincarnation. In holding and spreading the luminous, precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to you, I make this request. Okay, thank you, everybody.